you got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. We're here at the Alabama State House, as I previously mentioned. Thanks to Scott Stathagen, who typically puts us up on Wednesdays. We do our show in his conference room with two bowls of candy and, some other items up on the wall. Still to come up on the program, my friend Dave Mowry, he's a political consultant here in town, and maybe we'll talk about politics, maybe we'll talk about sports, I don't know, but that's coming up in about 30 minutes from now. But joining us now, friend of the program, got to know him back in my days up in Huntsville on the air on WVNN, would make the regular trek on once a month over to there was a Shoals Republican Club meeting I would go to on Saturday mornings there. And at the time, it was in Muscle Shoals, but I think sometime it moved to Tuscumbia, and it's kind of bounced around. But I got to know State Senator Larry Stutz, who joins us here on the program. Senator, how you been?
Great, Jeff. Thank you for having me on. And, yes, I guess that was where we first met. And Shoals Republican Club still meets on the first Saturday of every month.
The late David Black got me involved in that.
He got it started, and we're trying to continue. I'm not going to make it this month, but I've got another commitment on Saturday morning, but I usually try to go, and they have a good turnout and always some interesting conversations.
It's good that there's something like that. I mean, and I talk about this all the time. Andrew Sorrell, who's from that part of the state, sometimes it doesn't feel like you're really in the Alabama mix, kind of isolated away from this town. And that's, you know, that at least, that meeting kept people kind of engaged in the process here.
Absolutely. And we've had several state-level people come up, and we've had some panel discussions with some appeals court judges. And, you know, I mean, it's a hour-long program, but it's always very informative and always enjoyable.
Well, here we are. We're at another year of another year of this quadrennium. Last year, the gambling debacle, and if you read the news today or yesterday or the day before yesterday, you would hear it's back on. What are you hearing there? Anything?
Well, last year that was a real issue, and because it took up so much energy of the entire session. And of course, the House passed a gambling measure, and then it failed in the Senate by one vote. And I think the leadership between the House and the Senate kind of said, and the House members said publicly, you know, we're not going to deal with it again until you pass something in the Senate. And I think right now there are not the votes there in the Senate. We have talked about different proposals that might come up. And, both of them require constitutional amendments. So both of them would require 21 votes in the Senate. And they got 20 votes last year. And Senator Reid, who's no longer in the Senate, was a yes vote. So they were down one vote last year. Now they're down two, because they have to have 21 yes votes.
For a constitutional amendment, right. Three-fifths majority. And, right. And like, look, Senator Albright voted against his own bill last year. If he gets it back, he brings a bill and he votes for it. They still got to come up with a vote somewhere.
With one more vote. And I think right now they don't have it, and that's why we're not seeing any bills dropped yet, is they don't have the votes lined up.
Well, and I tell you what, like, let's talk about this a little. And this is like this continuation of the quadrennium, but you got a new pro tem. This is not necessarily surprised. I think Senator Gudger's filling that role pretty well.
I do too. I think he's done an outstanding job of picking up here kind of in midstream and keeping the process moving. He's done a very good job, and so is Senator Livingston continuing as majority leader and Singleton as the minority leader. So the three of them have worked very well together and have kept the train on the track.
Singleton irritates me just because he is so good at using the rules for Democrats' advantage, he and Roger Smitherman. But the rules are what the rules are. They're going to do what they got to do. But that's, like I said, probably a discussion for another time. Something you were very instrumental in, Senator, let's talk about the PBM compromise, Senator Beasley, with the bill. Walk us through that, the details, and where we are right now.
Well, as you know, all your listeners may not know, the bill passed unanimously out of the Senate. And I told people when I had the Senate Bill 99 that as we worked through the process, my goal changed. I initially wanted to pass a bill, and by the time we had worked through the process for several weeks, I had told several people, I don't want to just pass it. I want to pass it unanimously because I want to send a really strong message to the House. And then there was another PBM bill, and we ended up sort of combining those. It had probably 95% of what was in my bill. It had some really good provisions in the bill, and it ended up being Senate Bill 252. And to have bipartisan support, Senator Beasley is a pharmacist.
Right.
And so anyway, we asked him to carry the bill, and then we did pass it unanimously, and it's in the House now. It's in, I think, in the House committee today.
Well, that'll be one to watch. Hey, do you ever feel like saying, I told you so? Medical marijuana, you are the outspoken opponent. You and your Schultz colleague kind of at odds on this one. Senator Melson from north of the river there. What a disaster that has turned out to be.
Oh, it absolutely has. And as I said, I've been consistently against it. And I just think that we have normal courses of ways of prescribing medicine, of medicine being dispensed, of pharmacists being involved in the process. And, my argument against the so-called medical marijuana is that, number one, it legitimizes the use of marijuana. Well, it's okay. It's a medicine. And I know other medicines can be involved in the opioid crisis. I understand all that, but it makes it more legitimate and more readily available in society. And if you look at what's happened in the last year, marijuana is now the number one impaired driver drug. It surpassed alcohol this past year. If you look at the data from the Department of Forensic Sciences in impaired drivers, the number one toxicology thing is marijuana. If you look at fatal car accidents where an autopsy is done, the number one toxicology result is marijuana. And, it's a huge problem. And we, right now, we have it available in convenience stores all over the state as CBD, hemp, yeah. I mean, however you want to say
Delta,
you derive
whatever,
it.
Yeah. We passed a medical marijuana bill, and it was supposed to, help the neediest people in need, stop seizures or whatever. And what it's turned out to be, I think it's just fight, this turf war the state's in the middle of, because they think down the line they're going to do something with recreational marijuana. It is not serving the public good as it was sold in the Alabama legislature. What was that, 2019?
I think so.
It's 2025, and not a single prescription has been written because all of this is tied up. And this is just when the state gets involved in these things, it's a train wreck.
I made that point over and over when we were debating it, that the potential for abuse, the potential for corruption, all these things are just off the scale, and that's why it was a bad idea. But, even with the medical marijuana, it would not be prescribed if a physician was going to recommend it. That was all they could do, is they would recommend it, and then you would go to a dispensary to get it. You wouldn't go to a conventional drugstore. It totally bypasses the usual ways of medicine. And then talking about the impaired drivers, you know, I asked the questions, and I still don't know the answer to, but I asked the question when we were debating it, of if you have a cannabis card, which is what you would get through that bill, what that bill specified, that would say you were eligible for medical marijuana, and then this cannabis card would allow you to have your personal supply of marijuana without it being illegal. The question I ask is, if you have a cannabis card, can you also have a CDL? If you have a cannabis card, can you operate heavy machinery at a plant? If you have a cannabis card, can you drive a school bus?
All these occupations require some drug testing, right?
Right. But if you had the cannabis card, then
you're a get out of jail. Well, whatever.
It's a get out of jail free card if you test positive for marijuana. But again, that doesn't minimize the fact that you could be impaired and you could have, you know, anxiety, depression, whatever, any of these, insomnia, any of these things that are on the list. Right. That you could get a cannabis card for, and you could be at some level of impairment legally and still driving a school bus. Those things are just unacceptable to me.
Well, so, those are like loopholes, but we have these workplace sort of conditions where you don't need the stuff in your system, or you're ineligible for employment just because your workman's compensation, you know, has to brace for
right.
this. And so, you know, this is a big leap forward. Even it's not recreational marijuana. True. But it's introducing a new intoxicant into society. Now it's already here. I'm not naive.
I fully understand all that.
But
it's already here, but we need
the state of Alabama seal on it, you know?
Right. We've got plenty of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows what happens? It probably something will happen at the federal level if it ever does. Yeah. But the state of Alabama has so far, their foray into this has been a disaster. It really, really has. Yeah. It's embarrassing. Yeah. Joined by State Senator Larry Stutz for just a few more minutes. Alabama Department of Public Health, getting that. We had the COVID experience, and you and I talked a lot about this during COVID. The powers of the state health officer, some of that has been reined in by the legislature. You looking at it now? Is there more work to be done? Or are you?
Oh, there is. Satisfied? And it frustrates me. And some of this is going to change from the federal level. And Dr. Harris and I have talked about it, and I've told you before. I don't know on the air, off the air, but Dr. Harris and I are friends. We were in residency together. I mean, we may not agree on everything,
right.
but we can certainly discuss it as friends. And, you know, the thing that frustrates me is, you know, you can't turn on the radio hardly without hearing
those dang ads. Yeah.
One of the ads promoting catch you up to date on all your vaccines. And of course, you know, there's federal money that was appropriated to do the advertising to push vaccines. And so on the state level, they're spending that money. But, you know, my argument is send it back. I mean, we don't need those kind of ads just constantly being done.
Was it Representative Butler says you're using public money, and it's federal money. It's not state money, but essentially, the Alabama Department of Public Health is just advertising for Big Pharma.
Right, 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 100%. And that's what I'm against. I wish we would stop all those ads. And
a couple of issues I have with that. Number one, when you turn on the radio and you hear that ad, it's like, oh, yeah, I need to go get my vaccines updated. I'm going to go down to the Department of Public Health. Or I mean, nobody's doing that. Number one, it's just money they're just spending. Number two, like, I don't know, in this era of, like, RFK Jr. and all the skepticism about public health, is do we need do we need that kind of full court press on some of this, or do we need to kind of pump the brakes a little bit on that stuff?
Probably pump the brakes. And listen, I am not anti-vaccine. I mean, you know, there are vaccines that have stood the test of time that, I'm old enough to remember people that had polio. And, you know, the polio vaccine basically eradicated polio in the United States from the 40s and 50s on. And so people your age probably don't even know anybody that had polio. But so I'm not against those kind of proven vaccines. But, you know, I took two COVID vaccines. But if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have taken either one of them.
Yeah.
I would have taken my chances. And so all the negative talk, all the negative results have, unfortunately, steered a lot of people toward not taking vaccines that have stood the test of time that absolutely need to be taken. But it's kind of polluted the water.
Yeah, and I tell the story like, well, the vaccine regimen you give to newborns, you're an obstetrician, like, how much of that needs to be really scrutinized in this day and age, do you think? Because I hear that all the time. Like, wow, look at this. This is a lot of shots we're giving out today.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it does need to be scrutinized. And, you know, there's a huge battery, and I honestly could not even tell you all the things that are in the vaccines that all the children get. But I know from when I was a child and the children now, it's a several fold increase in the number of vaccines that are recommended. And, you know, and with the issue with the COVID, I mean, the mortality rate of COVID in children was essentially zero. And so there was absolutely no reason to say everybody needs to get a COVID vaccine for their child. And I understand the herd immunity, and if you get a higher percentage of the population immune, you know, but the best immunity is the natural immunity. And so let the children get exposed, let it run its course, and then they have natural immunity. And that's better than giving the children a vaccine for something that's not really going to make them very sick.
Right. That's fair enough. Senator, we're out of time, but you've been very kind to stop by this morning, and always glad to get you on.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. I always enjoy talking to you.
Hey, State Senator Larry Stutz, very kind of him to say that. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.